Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Mike Dettillier is the author of the Imedy Draft Report, Titans Radio Draft Analyst, and he's nice enough this morning to join us to wrap up the 2018 NFL Draft. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you, guys.
Do you believe in quality over quantity, and do you think it applies to what the Titans did this weekend with their four-player draft class?
Listen, everybody looks at it a little differently, and this wasn't the strongest draft class around. So you got what you got. And this team, you can see the blueprint. I mean, it looks like this football team is trying to build themselves as Patriots Southeast. So, you know, whatever plan that you have in place, you got to roll with it. And, you know, I think Robinson and Rabel made the decision, hey, we're gonna go with the quality guys and stay away from the quantity and try to get us some free agents that can help us on special teams or in depth positions.
Mike Dettillier with us. Give us some aspects of the Patriots blueprint that you see on the Titans roster right now.
Guys that have been on winners. I think that you can't teach that. You either have it or you don't. You've been on winning programs. They put a tremendous amount of effort and character on people. That's something that the Patriots have done for a long period of time. Team-oriented guys. Being able to sacrifice what's best for you is best for the team. And you have to make that adjustment. As a highly recruited high school player and maybe a big-time college guy, that isn't on the resume. So that's a judgment call when you make that decision. That's been part of the Patriots' way. The only thing that stayed consistent over, you know, with the last 15, 16 years is what? The owner, the head coach, and the quarterback. Everything else is 52 pickup. And I think that that's the type of football team that you're going to have here. We live in a commuter world of the NFL. Constant changes, offensively, defensively, special teams, coaches, and you have to adjust to that. And I think no one's done it as well as the Patriots have done it. And you see the same sort of blueprint of events happening in Nashville with the Titans.
Mike, I talked to a scout about Rashawn Evans who said the reason he was doing the pass rushing stuff early was because it's kind of easier, and it took him a while to kind of grow into the inside backer position where some people not as good as he was were playing ahead of him early. What do you expect his learning curve to be? He said he definitely wants to be the quarterback of this defense. I think that's certainly what they'd be looking for in him as a three-down linebacker. You expect him to be ready to go in that complete role on opening day, or should we think it might take a little bit of time, even learning on the job, like it did at Alabama?
It's going to take a little while. Listen, there aren't a lot of plug-and-play guys in this league. No matter, you might think it, but there aren't a lot of those type guys that take control of the defense as a rookie, that all of a sudden things change because of them. Occasionally, there are those type players. But, you know, it's few and far between. So it's going to take him a little while to pick up all the nuances that's in the NFL. Only thing I can tell you is he had the best teacher in college football, in Nick Saban. I mean, when you're in that program, you understand what you have to do, when you have to do it, and how to do it. If not, you know what? I got a guy right behind you who's ready to take your place. One of the things he does very well, and Nick is smart enough to figure it out, is he was a really good pass rusher. And it didn't matter if it was off the edge or inside. Now, for some scouts who only watch him as a junior, and they kind of read the bio and didn't watch Alabama play, that's an easy assumption he played outside instead of inside. But look at the guys that were playing inside, you know, for Alabama before him. It don't take a rocket scientist to figure out why he wasn't a full-time player inside. One of the things Nick has always preached about is, I'm going to put the best four guys I have at linebacker. And I don't care where they're going to do it, and I want you sometimes to be interchangeable. If you knew Nick Saban's way, then that comment about he played outside because he was a better pass rusher than inside then doesn't make a lot of sense. It's his assumption. And a lot of times we know what assumption means.
Well, and Mike, you mentioned the competition at Alabama at all spots. And Rashawn Evans was a one-year starter at Alabama. Someone would look at that as something that's a negative when viewing him as a college player. But you also talked about the intangibles that John Robinson's looking for with Patriots Southeast. Can that also be viewed as a positive that he stuck with it at Alabama, made it through all that competition with all those great players at inside linebacker and started for that 1 year and became a first-round pick?
Yeah, because he played a lot as a sophomore. You know, he had a lot of playing time as a sophomore there. Again, when you're at that type program, you got to understand that sometimes you're not going to walk in and be the guy. All I know is, at LSU, how many years did Debo Jones start? One. How many years did Quan Alexander start at LSU? One. Those guys are pretty good NFL players, aren't they? So they had to wait their turn to get into that spot. And at some of these programs, like in Alabama, you're seeing situational play a lot. And that's part of the pro game also. Sticking it out is big today because, you know, a lot of times a major college guy who's been a highly recruited football player, he doesn't get he's got to wait. You know, he wants to move on to go somewhere where he plays right away. We see it a lot of the quarterback situation, even at running back today. So it's a positive, but I think, you know, when you sign on at a major college, if it's an Alabama or an LSU or an Ohio State or Southern Cal or Oklahoma, you understand that you're not walking in right away. Most of the time, you're not walking in right away, and you're seeing starting time. What you're seeing is situational play, and then you work your way into being a starter. It's part of major college football today when you play at one of those power schools.
Mike, not everyone can be a top 10 pick. I know that going into this question. But what are his limitations? What kept Evans from being higher in the first round and possibly a top 10 pick like Roquan Smith?
I think one of the things there is maybe some – I thought he was a solid cover guy. But that's an area he has to get better at. Because you know what? You run out of downs eventually. You know, they got to pull you off the field on third down. And it is matchup league. And I think that's one of the things – that probably kept him from going higher. I think a lot of people question how well he would adjust to having to cover a back or a tight end coming out the backfield. It is what it is. You have to be able to do that in this league to be a three-down linebacker. What makes Luke Kuechly who he is or Debo Jones who he is today is a lot to the fact that they can cover. Now, with Rashawn, that's a part he's got to get better at. He's got to be able to cover better coming out of the backfield. When you look at Roquan, he was a good cover guy at Georgia, and he got better at it. The more he worked at it, the better he got in the coverage part of the game. But physically, his ability to get around heavy equipment up front along the offensive line, use his arms and hands to work around, he does that at a real high level. And somebody looks, you know, looks like what he looks like. He's like carved out of stone. To put that big body in reverse, I think, is the reason why he lasted as long as he did.
Mike Dettillier with us here on 104.5 The Zone.
Mike, with Harold Landry, part of the reason he dropped, allegedly, according to Twitter, is that there were rumors flying or some teams had medical issues with him. What's your understanding of if any teams had some sort of medical issues with him, and what's your thinking on why he was there at 41?
You know, medical issues are kind of funny. We did an interview with Anthony Munoz a few weeks back. And Anthony was the second pick in the draft. And he told us that of the top six teams that year, five of them flunked it physically. And Munoz turned out to be a pretty good player in this league. And he didn't miss much time because of injury. Everybody looks at the medicals a little different. My thing with Harold, where he lasted as long as he did, I think some people viewed him as a little bit of a hybrid player. And he was coming off a down senior season. I mean, as a junior, he was a dominating edge pass rusher. I was actually surprised he came back. Most guys put up those type numbers, they're out of there. Punch my ticket, I'm going to the NFL. And Harold has not played in the reverse position. His deal is bend, get off the edge, go find the quarterback. You know, that's his position at Boston College. As I wrote in my draft book, who he reminds me a lot of, and boy, I've been doing this way too long, but he reminds me a lot of Pat Swilling when he came out of Georgia Tech. They built sort of the same. Their game is sort of the same to bend, get off the edge, and then close in on the quarterback. Pat was a third-round pick. What the big question mark was about Pat, he couldn't cover, and he had a few little injuries. At Georgia Tech. And some teams flunked him. Pat Swilling was a pretty good player in this league. I got to see it right here in New Orleans, and then he went on to Detroit and Oakland. So I do think that the medical point of view, there's a lot of differing opinions on the medicals today. But in my opinion, why Harold sort of sunk is a bit twofold. One, he's a pass rusher. He's not a guy that's going to drop back in the coverage part of the game. And he's a bit of a hybrid player. For some teams that wanted to use him as a defensive end, man, if I see him at 250 pounds with his hand in the dirt, I'm going to run the ball at him. So, you know, you got a little bit of contrast there. He fits into that 3-4 alignment where you can move him around a little bit, like a chess piece, to move him around the board. And I think that's the key to a 3-4 alignment. Is where you know where one of the outside rushers are coming from, but you're not sure about the second. You know, Wade Phillips and Bum Phillips changed that equation years ago in being able to move that second outside linebacker around. But Landry's got some special skill set as a pass rusher and really good closing speed. The ankle injury, you could see, really affected him last year. He didn't have to push off. And the difference between getting a sack and a pressure is the final couple of steps. He got that as a junior. He didn't get that as a senior. I think a lot of it had to do with the ankle injury.
Mike, Dane Cruikshank, corner out of JUCO, and likely more of a safety in the NFL, but could we see him in a hybrid role in special packages?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think exactly what you brought up. You know, years ago, the Cardinals did it with Deion Buchanan, who was really a big, strong safety, and they moved him to the outside linebacker spot. I saw it here in New Orleans. The Saints did it a lot with Kenny Vaccaro, where you had two linebackers and three safeties, and that's part of the league today. And, you know, Dane's a big guy. Now, I don't want him playing cornerback for me, but I think at either strong safety or in that hybrid position, to take the place of another linebacker in the coverage part, fits him well. Very aggressive player, a little bit out of control sometimes, but boy, he has got a heat-seeking missile out on the field, a really hard hitter, good open field tackler. Where he's got to get better, and in having watched him, sometimes he does not take a good angle of pursuit, and he pulls himself out of a play. But he'll ring your bell if you cross his area of the field. And he is one tough guy. And I think that strong safety, hybrid outside linebacker safety spot, that's what you're going to see Dane do.
Luke Falk does not have a super big arm, but what can he potentially become for the Titans?
He'll be your number two quarterback. I mean, Luke is a West Coast dink and dunk, short field, middle range thrower, and he's very accurate, sharp. He understands that part of the game extremely well, and figuring out the processing part of the of where to go with the football. He did that extremely well at Washington State. But if you look at how he was put in that system, it was perfect for his talent. In that, you're right, his deeper ball sails on him. He doesn't have the rifle to put a lot of air under the throw. But where he's really effective, short, middle-range game. But isn't that the NFL today, to be honest? I mean, that, you know, yeah, you throw the deep ball occasionally, but the game's built around the short area of the field, out in the flat to the running back, to the tight end, hit the wide receiver in a little crossing pattern, a little hook or whatever. And so it won't take him long to figure out the Titan system. He is a really sharp guy. He understands this game at a low level. And what I liked about him was his process. Some of the other guys that were picked ahead of him, they have better tools to work with, but they don't process what's breaking down in front of them as well as Luke. I think he's a really good number two quarterback. And in this league, all I know is the Eagles put that trophy up in the air with Nick Foles. And my comparison in my book was, in essence, the same way. He's a lot like him, a lot like Nick Foles, throwing the football. His area of expertise is in the short, middle-range part of the game.
If you're making another comp and you're trying to make a tie-in with the Titans offense and Matt LaFleur now, how does he compare to Jared Goff?
Jared's got a better rifle. I mean, Jared can make all the NFL throws. But it came from similar systems. In essence, where, man, listen, California, you playing quarterback for them, you better have a high insurance rate. Because you're getting whacked on every play. There ain't no extra protection for you. At Washington State, Falk got banged around pretty good there. Because if you spread the field out and put everybody out in a pattern, you got to get rid of the football fast. Because, you know, you got five guys and sometimes seven people up front to rush the quarterback. Very similar systems to what Goff played in. Now, for me, Goff is a much better middle to deep ball thrower than what Luke is. He can make all the NFL throws and really, really well. Falk on the deeper throws, like I said, what you see with him is almost like the ball got helium in it. I mean, it stays up in the air a long time.
Mike, we were talking yesterday about some of our favorite drafts, and one that stood out to me, the first half of it anyway, Cincinnati Bengals, Billy Price, Jesse Bates, Sam Hubbard, Malik Jefferson, Walton, the running back out of Miami. As far as I know, none of them with vast criminal records either. What did you think of what the Bengals did?
Listen, I thought they did pretty good for the Bengals. You know, you're right about it. Their team, they're willing to take a chance on a player. How they passed up on Arden Key is amazing, because he would be one of those guys that they would take a shot at. You know.
Raiders are back as competition for those
Raiders
kind of guys.
Raiders are back with that, David Gruden. He got the chalk in his hand with those picks. there ain't no question about on that part. So I like what Cincinnati did overall. Again, this is a football team that had an opportunity, and now the window has closed with them. But they've got a good accumulation of young talent. I like what the Broncos did. When you look at it, they walked away with the best defensive player in this draft class in Bradley Chubb. And in my opinion, defensive end today is the hardest position to find in college or pro football. All I know is they only had two defensive ends taken in round one. I saw five quarterbacks go. 7-on-7 has changed the world forever in that it has made a lot of these 6'4", 6'5" guys, you know, they don't want to play defense anymore. They don't want to play outside linebacker or defensive end. They want to play wide receiver or tight end. And so now you've got this huge accumulation of receivers and tight ends. The quarterbacks are more advanced than ever before. Where's the pass rushers? They aren't there. We talked about this in some of the shows we're doing here locally, that we lived in that era of what you saw with Julius Peppers and Justin Houston and, you know, J.J. Watt's coming off now back-to-back years with injuries. Von Miller, with Dwight Freeney, just recently retired. Oldon Smith, who looked to be on a pace that he could have really done something, that he fell way off the wagon. And where are the next great pass rushers coming from? You look at players 25 years of age or younger today in the NFL. That's over the last 4 years. How many guys that you can say for sure are really top pass rushers? You got one, Joey Bosa with the Chargers. Now, Myles Garrett might be that guy. He certainly has flashed it. Jadeveon Clowney, after a rough start with injuries, he's flashed it. And you got the kid out in Jacksonville, Yannick Nolke. He's got that skill set, too. Now, he's fortunate that, you know, too, once they brought in Calais Campbell, who's also a player up in age, that, you know, they get a lot of blocking, some chips going on him. Look at the NFL. Tell me another guy 25 or under that's in that category. Four guys in 4 years. That's not a lot. I'm looking through the telescope now. Where are they coming out from? Look at the high school ranks. Look at the college ranks. They're coming out one or two a year. And you got five and six quarterbacks, five goes in round one, and you got one going the second day. So from a number standpoint, where are they going to come from? That's why you're going to find the Marcus Davenports of the world sort of take over, where 4 years ago, he was a 198-pound wide receiver, and he got swung over the defensive end. They're just not there. And that's why when you get a chance to pick a guy that can influence the quarterback, you got to do it. Because those guys just, we live maybe through that golden age of it. Just same way with quarterbacks, but I think there's more numbers there at quarterback today than there were, say, you know, 10 years ago, we saw the heyday of the quarterbacks. You go back over the last couple of years, defensive ends, man, they're difficult to find. Last year was an anomaly that you had a larger number of them than usual, but they're coming out like one or two a year in the round one. That's not good for a league that's got 32 teams.
Mike Dettillier is the author of the Emity Draft Report, MikeDettillier.com, Titans Radio Draft Analyst. Mike, thank you as always. It was another great draft season.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it.